from the reminiscences of A.P. Milyukov, 1848 to 1849. I made Dostoevsky's acquaintance in the winter of 1848. That was a momentous period for enthusiastic and cultured youth. After the February Revolution in Paris, the reforms of Pius IX, the risings in Milan, Venice, and Naples, the victory of liberal ideas in Germany, and the revolutions of Berlin and Vienna, everyone believed in the renaissance of the whole European world. The rotted pillars of reaction were crumbling one after the other, and all over Europe, new life seemed to be in bud. Yet in Russia, at that time, prevailed the most crushing reaction. Science, no less than the press, could hardly breathe beneath the heavy yoke of the administration, and every sign of mental vitality was stifled. From abroad, a quantity of liberal writings, partly scientific, partly literary, were smuggled into the country. In the French and German papers, people, despite the censorship, were reading stirring articles. But among ourselves, all scientific and literary activity was rendered well-nigh impossible, and the censorship tore each new book to pieces. Naturally, all this had a highly exciting effect upon the younger generation, who, on the one hand, were, through these foreign books and journals, making acquaintance not only with liberal ideas, but with the most extreme socialist doctrine, and on the other, were finding that the 256 most harmless notions of liberalism were relentlessly persecuted in their own country. They would read the flaming speeches made in the French Chamber and at Frankfurt, and at the same time see how, among ourselves, someone was punished like a criminal every day for an incautious word or a forbidden book. Almost every foreign post brought news of fresh rights gained for themselves by the people, while in Russian society one heard only of fresh special decrees and persecutions. All who remember that time will know the effect this had upon the younger generation. There now began to form, in Petersburg, little groups of young men, who for the most part had but recently left the high schools. These assembled solely to discuss the latest news and rumours, and to express opinions freely. In these groups, new acquaintances were made, and old ones renewed. I happened in this way to be present at an assembly which took place at the abode of the young writer A.N. Plesheyev. I there entered into relations with a set of men whose memories I shall ever cherish. Among others were present Porfiry Lemansky, Sergei Durov, Nikolai Monbeli, and Alexander Palm, both of whom were officers of the Guards, and the brothers Mikhail and Fyodor Dostoevsky. All these young men were extraordinarily sympathetic to me. I became particularly intimate with the two Dostoevskys and Monbeli. The latter then lived in barracks, and we used to assemble at his quarters too. I made further acquaintances among his circle, and learnt that large assemblies took place at the abode of one M.V. Butashevich Petrushevsky, whereat speeches on political and social questions were made. Someone offered to take me to Petrushevsky, but I declined, not from timidity or indifference, but because Petrushevsky, whose acquaintance I had recently made, had not particularly attracted me. He held quite two paradoxical opinions, and showed a certain aversion for all things Russian. On the contrary, I very willingly accepted an invitation to enter the little group which gathered about Durov. He attracted many who belonged also to Petrushevsky's set, but embraced more moderate opinions. Durov lived at that time with Palm in Gorohovaya Street. At his small abode there assembled every Friday an organized circle of young men, among whom the military element was represented. As the host was of modest means, and the guests always remained until 3 o'clock in the morning, each had to pay a monthly contribution towards the entertainment and the hire of a piano. I attended these evenings regularly, until, in consequence of the arrest of Petrushevsky and the members of his circle, they were suspended. Dostoevsky also frequented these evenings at Durov's. Our circle occupied itself with no revolutionary plans of any kind, and had no written statutes at all. In short, it could not possibly be described as a secret society. We assembled to exchange the then prescribed books, and to discuss questions which were not permitted to be openly touched on. Most of all were we interested in the question of the emancipation of the peasants, and at our meetings we always spoke of the ways and means to this reform. Some thought that in view of the reaction which had been brought about in our country by the European revolutions, the government would never decide to carry out the emancipation of the peasants, and that it would come rather from below than from above. Others, on the contrary, maintained that our people had no desire whatever to follow in the footsteps of the European revolutionaries, and would patiently await the decision of their fate by the government. In this sense, Fyodor Dostoevsky expressed himself with particular emphasis. When anybody in his vicinity declared that the emancipation of the peasants by the lawful path was most doubtful, he would retort that he believed in no other path. We talked, too, of literature, but chiefly with reference to remarkable newspaper articles. Occasionally the older writers were discussed, and very severe, one-sided and mistaken judgments often found expression. Once, when the subject happened to be Derzhavin, and somebody declared that he was much more of a turgid and servile ode-maker and courtier than the great poet for which his contemporaries and the schools had taken him, Dostoevsky sprang up, as if stung by a wasp, and cried, "What? No poetic rapture, no true ardour in Derzhavin. His not the loftiest poetry." And forthwith he declaimed from memory a poem of Derzhavin's with such power, with such ardour, that the singer of Catherine the Great rose at once in our estimation. Another time he delivered some poems of Pushkin and Victor Hugo, similar in subject, and proved to us with great success that our poet was a much more remarkable artist than the Frenchman. Durov's circle included many fervent socialists. Intoxicated by the utopias of certain foreign theorists, they saw in this doctrine the dawn of a new religion, which one day should remodel the world on the basis of a new social order. Everything that appeared in French on the question was discussed hotfoot by us. We were always talking about the utopias of Robert Owen and Cabet, but still more, perhaps, of Fourier's phalanstery and Proudhon's theory of progressive taxation. We all took an equal interest in the socialists, but many refused to believe in the possibility of practically realizing their teachings. Among these latter was, again, Dostoevsky. He read all the works on socialism, it is true, but remained wholly sceptical. Though he granted that all these doctrines were founded on noble ideals, he nevertheless regarded the socialists as honest but foolish visionaries. He would say again and again that none of these theories could have any real meaning for us, and that we must find our material for the development of Russian society not in the doctrines of foreign socialists, but in the life and customs, sanctified by centuries of use, of our own people, in whom had long been apparent far more enduring and normal conceptions than were to be found in all the utopias of Saint-Simon. To him, he would say, life in a commune or in a phalanstery would seem much more terrible than in a Siberian prison. I need not say that our socialists stuck to their opinions. All new laws and other actions of the government were also discussed and severely criticized by us. In view of the arbitrary rule which prevailed in our country, and the grand events which were coming off in Western Europe, and inspiring us with the hope of a better and freer mode of existence, our discontent is wholly comprehensible. In this respect, Dostoevsky showed the same zeal and the same rebellious spirit as the other members of our circle. I cannot now remember the actual content of his speeches, but I do recollect that he ever protested against all measures which in any way implied the oppression of the people, and was especially infuriated by those abuses from which the lowest ranks of society and the students equally suffered. One could always recognize the author of Poor Folk in his judgment. One of us proposed that discourses should be held in our assemblies. Each was to write an indictment of the government and read it aloud to the rest. Dostoevsky approved this plan and promised to do something of the kind. I forget whether he carried out his promise. The first discourse, which was given by one of the officers, dealt with an anecdote which was at that time common talk. Dostoevsky found fault both with the subject and the form of this effort. On one of the evenings, I read a passage from Lamennais, Parole d'un Croyant, which I had translated into Church Russian. Dostoevsky assured me that the grave biblical language of my translation sounded much more impressive than that of the original. Later on, we resolved to print several copies of some of our members' papers and circulate them widely, but this plan was never carried out. For just then the majority of our friends, and those in particular who had attended the Petrushevsky evenings, were arrested. Shortly before the breakup of the Durov Circle, one of its members had been in Moscow, and had brought from there a transcript of the famous letter which Bielinski had written to Gogol in the course of his correspondence with friends. Fyodor Dostoevsky read this letter aloud both in our circle and in the houses of several of his friends, and also gave it to different people to be transcribed anew. This was subsequently the main pretext for his arrest and banishment. Bielinski's letter, in its paradoxical one-sidedness, would scarcely impress anyone much at this time of day, but it then produced a remarkable effect upon all minds. Along with this letter, there was then circulating in our set a humorous article by Alexander Herzen, similarly brought from Moscow, in which our two capitals were contrasted no less wittily than maliciously. In the arrest of the Petrushevsky group, I know that numerous copies of these two works were seized. Besides our evenings for discussion and reading, we had musical ones. At our last assembly, a very gifted pianist played Rossini's overture to William Tell. On April the 23rd, 1849, I heard through Mikhail Dostoevsky of the arrest of his brother Fyodor, as well as of Durov, Monbeli, Filipov and others. A fortnight later, I was told one morning that Mikhail Dostoevsky also had been arrested the night before. His wife and children were left wholly without means of support, for he had no regular income whatever, and lived entirely by his literary work. As I knew the tranquil and reserved character of Mikhail Dostoevsky, I was really but little concerned as to his fate. It is true that he had frequented Petrushevsky, but he had been in disagreement with most members of the circle. So far as I knew, there could be little against him. Therefore, I hoped that he would soon be set at liberty. As a matter of fact, he was at the end of May, and came to me early in the morning to look up his son, Fedya, whom I had housed. In the evening of the same day, he gave me many particulars of his arrest, of his stay in the fortress, and of the questions which had been put to him by the Committee of Investigation. From these questions we could gather what would be the indictment against Fyodor. Although he was charged only with some rash utterances against high personages and with the dissemination of prescribed writings and the momentous Bielinski letter, these things could, with ill will, be given a very serious turn. In that case, a grievous fate awaited him. True that gradually many of those arrested were being set free, but it was said that many were threatened with banishment. The summer of 1849 was a sad time for all of us. I saw Mikhail Dostoevsky every week. The news about our incarcerated friends was very vague. We only knew that they were all in good health. The investigating committee had now ended its labours, and we daily expected the decision. But the autumn went by, and not until shortly before Christmas was the fate of the prisoners made known. To our utter amazement and horror, they were all condemned to death. The sentence was not, however, as all the world knows, executed. Capital punishment was, at the last moment, altered to other penalties. Fyodor Dostoevsky got 4 years hard labour in Siberia, and after completion of that sentence was to be enrolled as a private in one of the Siberian regiments of the line. All this was done so hastily and suddenly that neither I nor his brother could be present at the proclamation of the sentence on Semyonovsky Square. We heard the fate of our friends only when all was at an end, and they had been taken back to the Petropavlovsky fortress, except Petrushevsky, who was sent straight from the tribunal to Siberia. The prisoners were dispatched in parties of two and three from the fortress to their exile. On the third day after the sentence, Mikhail Dostoevsky told me that his brother was to depart that very evening, and that he wanted to go and say goodbye to him at the fortress. I too wished to say goodbye to Fyodor Dostoevsky. We both went to the fortress and applied to Major M., whom we had known in past days, and through whose mediation we hoped to obtain permission to see the prisoners. He told us that it was true that Dostoevsky and Durov were to be sent that very evening to Omsk, but permission to see our friends could be got only from the commandant of the fortress. We were conducted into a large room on the ground floor of the commandant's quarters. It was already late, and a lamp was burning in the room. We had to wait a very long time, and twice heard the cathedral bell of the fortress ring out the hour. At last the door opened, and there entered, accompanied by an officer, Fyodor Dostoevsky and Durov. We greeted them with a mighty shaking of hands. Despite the long, solitary confinement, neither had changed at all appreciably. The one seemed quite as grave and calm, the other as cheerful and friendly as before the arrest. Both already wore the travelling clothes, sheepskins and felt boots, in which prisoners were dressed for transportation. The officer sat unobtrusively at some distance from us on a chair and did not disturb our conversation. Fyodor talked first of all his joy that his brother had escaped a similar fate to his. Then he asked with warm interest for Mikhail's family and about all the details of his life. During the meeting he several times recurred to that theme. Dostoevsky and Durov spoke with genuine liking of the commandant of the fortress, who had treated them most humanely and done all that was in his power to alleviate their lot. Neither the one nor the other complained of the stern tribunal or the harsh sentence. The life which awaited them in prison did not alarm them. They could not then foresee the effect which the punishment was to have upon their health. When the Dostoevsky brothers took leave of one another, it was clear to me that not he who had to go to Siberia, but he who remained in Petersburg, suffered the more. The elder brother wept, his lips trembled, while Fyodor seemed calm and even consoled him. "Don't do that, brother," he said. "Why, you know me. Come, you are not seeing me to my grave. Even in prison there dwell not beasts but men, and many of them are possibly better and worthier than I am. We shall see one another again, I am sure of it. I confidently hope for that. I have no doubt at all that we shall meet again. Write to me in Siberia, send me books. I'll send word to you from there what books I need. I shall surely be allowed to read there. And when once I have the prison behind me, I'll write regularly. During these months I have lived through so much in my soul, and think of all I shall see and live through in the future. I shall truly have plenty of material for writing." He gave one the impression of regarding the impending punishment as a pleasure trip abroad, in the course of which he should see beautiful scenery and artistic treasures and make new acquaintances in perfect freedom. He never seemed to realize that he was to spend 4 years in the House of the Dead, in chains, in the company of criminals. Perhaps he was full of the thought that he would find in the most fallen criminal those human traits, those sparks of divine fire that, though heaped over with ashes, still glimmer, still are unextinguished, those sparks which, according to his conviction, burn even in the most outcast of mankind, in the most hardened of criminals. This final meeting lasted over half an hour. Although we spoke of many things, the time seemed short. The melancholy bell was sounding again when the Major entered, and said the interview was at an end. For the last time, we embraced. I did not then imagine that I should never see Durov again, and Fyodor Dostoevsky only after 8 years.